Not all guarantees are created equal. That's what makes the Total Trust Guarantee from Speedy Oil Change and Auto Service so special. It gives you 20/20 vision into the work we do. And now, you can get $10 off any 17-point oil change. Go to speedyoil.com/save for details. Speedy Oil Change and Auto Service, where you're in and out and back on the road with full service and total trust. Most vehicles discount off regular price. See store for details. See website for details on the Total Trust Guarantee.
Always a fun time when we can hook up with Jay Billis of ESPN. We got the draft coming up. OU Texas moving on. Woohoo! That's a big one. Jay, what's going on? Thanks for joining us. Always appreciate it.
Well, it's my pleasure on a week where all I have to do is get through 5 hours without getting up to go to the can. It's an exciting, exciting time.
Yeah, we're getting old, Jay. Just one of those deals. I'm thinking about buying a can that I can keep with me. I'm actually getting tired of getting up and going.
Well, there used to I don't know if you remember the movie Semi-Tough, but Burt Reynolds had to sit through a seminar or something and had some sort of contraption that allowed him to relieve himself without leaving the seminar. And that's kind of what I need for the draft. I used to be able to take long drives without pulling over, to find a gas station. But there are no gas stations at Barclays, so I'm gonna have to pump it out.
Have you seen this thing? We talked about it on the show. God, it must have been 5, 8, maybe even 8, 10 years ago. It's called the Stadium Pal, and it's kind of like a catheter, but it's an outside catheter. See, it's like a catheter without the pain of insertion. So it hooks up, and then there's a tube that runs down, and it's a sack that you tie, or it's like Velcro to your calf muscle. So you just tie it to your calf muscle, and then it just goes down into that, and then you just empty it after the show.
I think that's what Burt Reynolds had. But, given the fact that now, styles have gone more toward tight pants, yeah. I'm not sure I could pull that one off.
Hell, tight pants. I just wear shorts and say, you know what? I got to do what I got to do.
I should do that. I mean, we've had a year at home, during the pandemic where we've worn basically golf shirts and pajamas. So I don't see why we have to get dressed up again. But apparently we're going full bore back into, pre-pandemic stuff, no masks and suit and tie. So I'm not too excited about that part. I enjoyed the pajama analysis.
Yes.
That was provided last year.
Absolutely. See, if you wear the shorts, people can make bets at home on like how often you'll go. Active bladder, never know. Anyway, moving on. I'm not sure who I got on that topic, but it was fun while it lasted, not really. First off, I wanted to get your take on OU and Texas, because that was one that just was like, wow. That was a wow one to me, because the SEC is just gobbling up two big-time programs, and again, there's so many questions. What's going to happen to the Big 12? What's the next step? Where does this all end? I mean, when you first saw the news, what was your reaction? What were you thinking?
Well, my first reaction, Tom, was what we all think, and that is this is really about education. It's about the kids and the student-athlete experience.
Yeah, yeah.
And all of this just increases the student-athlete experience by maximizing markets and providing you the best, media rights deal. This is big business. I get it.
Yes.
I have no problem with it overall, and I'm glad that at least the commissioners and other, conference officials are starting to admit it. It's a little bit disingenuous for them to act like they're working together. Like Greg Sankey, the SEC commissioner, is on the committee exploring, increasing the college football playoff. And meanwhile, he's raiding another conference. And, the Big 12 clearly didn't know anything was going on until the news leaked. I understand that's how business is done, but you're kind of getting tired of having all these presidents lecture you on ethics and all that stuff when they're doing all this. But what I think is the logical next step of this. We've talked about super conferences and having four 16-team leagues. I mean, I'm not sure that necessarily it's going to be something that's balanced out where everybody's got the same number or similar number of teams. I mean, I said this on SportsCenter today. If I were Jim Phillips, the new commissioner of the ACC, I would go to the SEC and say, let's merge, and I'll be your associate commissioner. But let's take advantage of all these different markets and natural rivalries that we would have. You know, have Duke and Kentucky in football, and have Florida, Florida State, and have Georgia, Georgia Tech, and Clemson, South Carolina, and all that stuff. And we'll keep all the money, and we'll turn these two leagues into essentially the NFL and the NBA. And that's what it would be. It would be just a smaller version of that with a similar following. But they dominate, and that's what this is about. It's about trying to dominate all these markets, and the SEC is looking to do that, and they're doing getting Texas and Oklahoma is a pretty good first step, and it's not the end, I don't think.
Yeah.
Getting ready for the Wingspan Olympics later this week. There'll be people drinking the Jay Billis drinking game, Wingspan.
I'm ready to go. There are not the freakish wingspans this year, so we may not have as many drunk people by the 15th pick, but I will do the best I can. And I feel like it's an obligation for me to liquor up the country that's watching. And if I have to repeat it a few times, given that we don't have quite as many long-armed freaks, you guys probably don't remember this. We probably talked about it on your show, but I went an entire draft without saying wingspan.
What year?
Linear extent in space. I got all different kinds of things to where I didn't have to say long or wingspan, just because I was taking so much crap over it. I thought, well, this will be fun. Let's creatively try to get around this. And I did. And the funny part was nobody seemed to notice. I think they're drinking anyway. I don't think I have anything to do with it. I think people are drinking anyway.
Exactly.
I think you're probably right. You could always say, if a guy doesn't have a long wingspan, you'd go, well, this is, he doesn't have the wingspan you'd normally associate with this position. I mean, you could just turn it around that way and just force alcohol down their gullets, Jay.
I have done that. Like the first pick, you'll say, hey, tip it back, America, wingspan, wingspan, wingspan. Make a pick three at a time.
All three to get the party rolling.
Yeah, I have done some of those things, but you're trying to be as economical as you can with your words. So I often just say short arms when they don't have you.
Here's what you do. You say, this guy's a relative alligator. This guy's a relative alligator compared to the last guy.
Kevin Willis?
Yeah, hey. The alligator I primarily use for people who don't reach for their wallets when you're out at dinner somewhere, which I have a lot of those friends.
Jay, if I had to wager, I don't know why, but it seems like I'm reading all the tea leaves on the rumors. The Warriors have a couple lottery picks, 7 and 14. It sounds like maybe for economic reasons, maybe because they don't have a trade that they like, that they may wind up picking at 7 and 14. To me, I mean, I follow this stuff pretty closely. If Kuminga drops in their lap, I don't even think twice. I think he's such a freakish athlete. His upside's so great. I don't care what time frame they're on. You don't pass that guy. And then the guy that really intrigues me at 14 is Trey Murphy, the Rice transfer who went to Virginia. I mean, this guy is like, 45% from three and 95% from the line. I mean, that's the kind of guy that I wouldn't mind having on off the bench or on the floor at any point in the game.
Yeah, if Trey Murphy's there, he may be the smartest player in the draft. And, he only had three offers coming out of high school. I think it was Ryder, Army, and Rice. Wound up at Rice, and he transferred away from Rice to Virginia because he wanted to be a better defender. Now, when's the last time you heard that? Guys usually transfer because they're not getting enough shots, and my coach doesn't let me play point guard, and I have the ball in my hands and stuff. This guy's going, I need to learn to play defense at the highest level, and he goes to Virginia. But he is. He's incredibly efficient, can really shoot it, a legit 6'9". He can guard multiple spots, but he's not, it's not like he's going to go 1 through 4 or anything, but he's legit. He's a really good player, and I think he's going to continue to improve. The 7 pick is the one that really interests me the most. I mean, I think there'll be a lot of options at 14 that are better than you would normally have. Like, I think this is the best draft I can remember since 03. Wow. I don't keep a list or anything. It says, well, it goes 03, 06, 09. Like, I don't do all that, but it's the best I can remember. But my memory's fading. what I would say, like, 7, I don't think that Scotty Barnes is going to be there. Initially, right. I did, but I don't think he's going to be there. If I were Golden State, it would be hard for me to turn down Davion Mitchell of Baylor. He is such a stud defender and explosive guard. He may be small. He's only 6'2", but that dude is legit. But there are so many good options there. I just don't know. Like, your point about Kuminga is really good because, you know, if Clay comes back healthy and you got Steph and Clay, you don't necessarily need another guard right now. And having a front court player that's versatile and super athletic, I get that. But there are a lot of really good wings in the draft. There are a number of ways you could go, but to me, Mitchell would be really hard to turn down.
Yeah, what are his negatives? Because I love the biggest one I love about him is just his competitive nature. Like, he's a bulldog. He gets after you. He's not afraid. He's got the body to guard ones and probably the body to guard guys that are taller than him as well. So I love that. He's a little older and come in and, yeah, hopefully if they draft him, the thought would be, you know, he could be a playmaker and kind of help run that second unit. What are the negatives on him? Is size the biggest one?
That's what it is to me, and I've kind of gotten over that a little bit. You know, I used to be biased toward big guards, but in today's NBA, it's not as necessary. I don't think it's a bad thing to have a bigger guard. You'd prefer that. But I agree with you. Like, he's a stud competitor. He is relentless. He guarded Cade Cunningham when they played Oklahoma State, and Cunningham's 6'8". So, you know, he can get up underneath just about anybody and make it really difficult. I just think he's one of those guys that, even though he's a little bit older, he finishes junior year, transfer from Auburn and all that stuff. He's not going to fail. He's going to do really well. Now, is he going to be, are there other guys that maybe turn out to be long-term, you know, higher ceiling, better prospects? That's certainly a consideration, and there are a number of players in this draft that you're going to be able to get at a later point in the draft than you would expect given the talent level. So, you know, in other drafts, like the top four picks, I think in other years, not every other year, but in other years, you would consider worthy of the number one overall. And you know, to have guys, you know, the guys that they like, Jalen Suggs, Jalen Green, Evan Mobley, Cade Cunningham, all those guys in another given year could have gone number one. And so that's why it reminds me a little bit of 03. You know, you had, because remember back in 03, like we were, you know, all falling all over ourselves over LeBron, and rightfully so. But I don't remember anybody saying, hey, Chris Bosh, Dwayne Wade, that decision is between two Hall of Famers. You know, we didn't say that because nobody goes out on that limb. But I think we have similar type decisions this year where, you know, and again, saying Hall of Famer is a limb you don't want to go out on when these guys are 19 years old. You know, LeBron, you knew. The other guys, you don't seem to know, or I don't know at least. But I'm not going to be pounding the table if somebody takes Evan Mobley number two. I ranked him number two. If he goes ahead of Jalen Green, you know, I don't think people are going to, there's going to be anybody that says, well, I don't understand that. That doesn't make any sense. Of course it makes sense. It's not a bad pick at all.
You know, it's funny, we had Musselman on, Jay, and he was Eric Musselman from Arkansas, and he was saying that, you know, that the Razorbacks couldn't even bring it up the floor against Mitchell, that he was just so interrupted everything they did. Two guys that I love in this draft, one is Mitchell's teammate, Jared Butler, who was the most outstanding player in the Final Four. For some reason, this guy's now 24th on the list. I mean, I think he can play point guard in the NBA. I know some people view him as an undersized two. I see him as a point guard. I really like him. I think he's going to be a steal. And the other guy is the 18-year-old kid. I want your thoughts on him, who played in Turkey, Sengun. He's got like Kevin McHale drop steps and all. I mean, he's got a low post game that you just don't ever see anymore. Is he the next Jokic, and everybody's going to be talking about him in 5 years, or are you not impressed?
No, I'm impressed. I don't, you know, I hesitate to say Jokic because we're, you know, you're talking about a guy who's just the, you know, named the MVP. But Jokic, you know, remember Jokic was a second round draft pick, so it shows how much we, you know, how much we collectively know about all this. I think it's less likely that we're going to, you know, you're not going to know as much these days about players that, you know, as back in the day where we didn't have as much. Like, you can see these guys left and right on tape all the time if you don't, you know, if you're unable to see them as much in person. Every game is on Synergy or all these different scouting services. It's a lot easier to get. But I you know, I agree with you. Like, you know, Jared Butler is, if he goes in the 20s in another draft, he would have gone higher. That talent level would have gone higher. He's a similar analysis to Mitchell in that he's a little bit smaller than you would prefer for his position. And he can initiate and handle. He's not a natural point, I wouldn't say, but he can certainly initiate offense in the NBA and handle ball. And he's an excellent defender. You know, gets a lot of steals. He's very anticipatory and has really good instincts. And he moves without the ball. He gets, you know, he can get his own a little bit. Good mid-range game. Good finisher. You know, really, really competitive. I mean, those guys didn't win a championship by accident, and they're really good. And Macy O'Teague is really good from Baylor too. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you got options in this draft, and you're not locked into any one thing. It's just a question of what you like the best. And if you've got a Golden State, like when they get healthy, that they're going to have a contending team. So they have the luxury as a contender of being able to draft more toward need than just best available players. So it feels like you have more options that way.
Talking to Jay Billis, nice enough to join us on draft week for a little bit. What about Book Knight out of UConn? I only saw him play once, and look, his numbers, his shooting numbers were just busted. And that can be one of two reasons. One, well, your shooting's busted. Or two, you're actually a decent shooter. You're just taking way too many shots and taking too many tough shots. What is it with him, and what do you see as his future in the NBA?
I think his issue, because I agree with you on the two, you know, sort of the two things it could be. Like, I think it's the latter of the two. Okay. You mentioned that he's a bucket getter that could stand to take some better shots, but because of the team he played on at UConn, had to create more. So mm-hmm. His off the dribble shooting numbers were good. His catch and shoot numbers were not as good, and he knows that. But you know, he's been shooting the ball incredibly well, both at the combine and in workouts. I don't think he's a 3 o'clock shooter, where you know how you talk to coaches. Yep. And they'll say, "Geez, this guy kills it in practice every day. He doesn't make them in the games." You know, the 3 o'clock shooter, and the game starts at 7.
Yep.
But he's not that. I think he's going to continue. He's still a young player. I think he's going to continue to improve with all that stuff, and I think he'll be a very good shooter in the league. But the fact that he just knows how to get buckets, and he's a natural scorer. He and the two guys I like, you know, best outside of the top 10, and I put Corey Kispert in the top 10, who I think is the best shooter, overall shooter in the draft. Mm-hmm. From Gonzaga. But the two guys I like best are Book Knight and Moses Moody from Arkansas. You'd mentioned Musselman. Mm-hmm. Moody's got, you know, he's long, he's big. At 6'6", and he can get to the free throw line, and a really good scorer that could stand to be a better defender. But I think he's got the aptitude to do that.
Trades are always an interest. I just real quick, I wanted to ask him about, sure, Wiseman before I forget. There have been some discussion here about, look, it's Steph Curry's window, and we need to maximize this window, and Wiseman can't fit on this team right now. And I get that sentiment a little bit, Jay, in that what he did last year, he can't do this year if he wants to play and be a part of a winning team. Last year was a little weird anyway. But if he could just figure out, he's got so many skills, if he could figure out how to pare it down and just do a few things, run the court, pick and roll, catch the lob, get some offensive rebounds, that sort of thing. I know he can do more, but right now they don't need him to do more. But as he gets older and more mature, the body fills out. I mean, I think this guy could be really, really good. And the NBA is getting back into centers now. And we saw what DeAndre Ayton did and his maturity and him getting better and him kind of just doing – he can do more than that, but that's all they're asking him to do right now, and he does it really well. And for me, I don't know what that trade package would look like, but I would have a really, really hard time giving up on a 19-year-old that's that tall, that athletic, and has that much of a future ahead of him. I just think this guy could be a guy that you look back in 4 years, if you were to trade him and go, oh, God, what do we do?
Yeah, he was the guy I thought Golden State should take at number two last year. I slated him at number two, and he was a guy that could have been, you know, 5 years prior would have been a no-brainer number one pick. So I'm a big believer in Wiseman's ability level. You know, look, if again with Golden State, if you get something right away that helps you win in this window, you take it. I guess, but long term, I like Wiseman. Golden State's in a little bit of a different situation because of, you know, sort of the championship pedigree they've got and a closing window on Curry and Thompson. They've got a few years left that you can count on and Draymond. But, you know, past that, you're going to have to retool a little bit. So if you can get them the help they need now, I understand giving up some future years for that because, you know you have a shot now.
You know, two of the guys that it seems like I'm reading a lot about, Jay, as the draft gets closer. One is Franz Wagner from Michigan. And I can't decide if Wagner's really special and he's, you know, going to be a Sabonis type and really, you know, I know he plays defense, but, you know, and he shoots good free throws. I don't know if that's going to transition to him shooting the three ball at the next level. He's intriguing to me. And then the other guy I want your thoughts on is everybody seems to love Chris Duarte, who's a little bit older, but man, he had a good career at Oregon, and he says Klay Thompson's his role model, and a lot of people feel like he's ready to step in and maybe play minutes for Kerr next year. What do you think of Wagner and Duarte?
Wagner, I just don't know. I don't know whether he's going to be great. I think he'll be good and a good teammate, and he's so versatile on both ends of the court. He can do so many things. You know, he's a very good driver and an excellent cutter, and he actually drives off of his cuts, which sounds a little bit odd, but, you know, he'll catch the ball on a cut and be able to put the ball on the deck on the catch, and that's really difficult. It proved pretty difficult to guard in the actions that Michigan ran last year. He's you mentioned he's an excellent free throw shooter, but not a knockdown perimeter shooter. But I think he's going to improve there. So he's a good pick. He's just not a – I don't think he's a star player. But that may be true of Scotty Barnes, too. You know, he does, so, you know, a great glue guy, does so many things well, but doesn't shoot it. So that'll be interesting with Wagner. And you asked me about who's the other guy you asked me about?
Chris Duarte from Oregon.
Oh, Duarte, yeah. Yeah, it seems like, you know, we're talking about him like he's some 46-year-old man that's got, you know, 5 years left to live or something. Guy's 23 and we're counting him out. You know, he's got no room for growth at 23. We've all basically told everyone who we're going to be. But he is like ready to play right now. Like he's plug and play and tough, really good offensively, can shoot it, unafraid, good defender. And there are some similarities between him and Klay. He's not as good as Klay Thompson coming out of Washington State, but he's good. And so he's somebody that in the middle of the first round, I would start thinking about. Absolutely. I don't know what it is. I almost don't know how to process it because you do get this groupthink thing about, you know, when we were in school, you know, everybody stayed to be seniors, or maybe somebody left as a junior or something like that. But nobody said, well, this guy's, you know, learned everything he needs to learn at 22. So there's no upside there. He is what he is. Right. You know, nobody said that. Nobody said that. But we're saying that all the time now. It's really weird.
Yeah, well, when I came out, they weren't worried about my second contract. They were just wondering if I could get to my first contract. That was the deal with me.
Oh, when I got drafted, one, I got a telegram that was telling me I drafted. And then when I went to camp, I remember John McLeod asking me, he says, hey, Jay, how's the hotel? And I said, great, coach, thanks. And he goes, you got time to unpack yet? And I said, no, not yet. And he goes, good.
Jay, your best anecdote on the combine was when you said that you went to the combine and the scouts asked you if you spoke Italian.
I wish that were a joke. It's not.
Hey, hell, Jay, the team didn't even call me when I got drafted. I was playing poker with my buddies there all over. I got drafted. It was Kevin O'Neill who gave me a call. He goes, hey, congrats. I saw the Hornets drafted you. I said, I wouldn't know. Nobody's contacted me yet.
Yeah, you didn't know. Like back then, nobody cared. I mean, it wasn't like, you know, you're sitting in the stands at Barclays and you walk down in your suit and shook hands with, you know, the Russ Granick or something because you weren't a first-round pick.
God, oh, how times have changed. How they have changed. Have we picked out the attire for Thursday night yet?
Oh, yeah, I'm going to look great. I don't
know
exactly.
That's a given. I know that.
Yeah, I think I'm going with a sport coat instead of a suit this year because I get tired of, you know, sitting in that same seat and having swamp ass by the end of it and having to get everything dry yeah. clean. So I'm probably going jeans and a sport coat this year.
Very nice. See, I always went suit just because I knew when it came to matching. If it wasn't like the Granimals where I could match up two carnivores and two herbivores, if they didn't have that on the sports coat and the slacks, I'd screw it up somehow. And I figured a suit, you can't screw that up. I mean, they're built to match. That's what a suit is. So it easier for me, the better. And then I'd have the guy I bought the suit from tie my tie at the beginning of the year and just loosen it throughout the rest of the year and, you know, tighten that thing back up. And I was good to go.
Yeah, one tie, that is efficient.
Yeah.
I'm just looking forward to seeing like what the food options are going to be because in past drafts we'd get toward the end of the draft in the second round and we're commercial or something and they would bring out something to eat. So Van Gundy would start eating and you're like, "Well, you're going to be of zero help going forward. You're eating." And they're, you know, so sounds like it's coming to me on the next pick.
You're gonna have to carry round two, man.
You can always tell the eaters. Oh man. Hey Jay, thank you so much for joining us. Always a lot of fun. Have a good time Thursday and stay away from swamp ass. Nobody likes it.
Always a pleasure, gentlemen. Thank you.
take it easy, Jay.
Not all guarantees are created equal. That's what makes the Total Trust Guarantee from Speedy Oil Change and Auto Service so special. It gives you 20/20 vision into the work we do. And now, you can get $10 off any 17-point oil change. Go to speedyoil.com/save for details. Speedy Oil Change and Auto Service, where you're in and out and back on the road with full service and total trust. Most vehicles discount off regular price. See store for details. See website for details on the Total Trust Guarantee.